We will continue our conversation in a part two at democracynow.org. We'll also link to her columns online. Democracy Now! Produced with Renee Fels, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena, Tammy Warren, of Camille Baker, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alcock, Tamari, as studio. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook. It's exactly, or close to, 6 o'clock. Time for Off the Wall. very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi, Emmanuel.
How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Ready for the storm? There's a storm moving in.
I heard it was brewing.
Yeah, it's a big storm. It's actually not that big. Don't panic. But it might rain a little bit, so be careful. There's such an undue amount of attention paid to weather forecasts, you know. Every night on TV, it's like 10 minutes just to tell you if there's going to be a little bit of overcast skies or, you know, the sun's going to come out tomorrow, maybe. I mean, who cares? You know, when we travel, we don't hear the weather forecast. We just, you know, say, hey, look, it's sunny today. It's raining. You know, if there's something catastrophic coming, okay, give the weatherman a few minutes. But every day, you know, you ever watch weather in Los Angeles? It's so boring. All the days are the same. It's going to be hot. It's going to be, you know, sunny. There's not going to be any rain. And then occasionally that changes. Not often. Here it's a little bit interesting, at least. Because we have the seasons, you know. We have cold and we have hot and we have hurricanes and, you know, thunderstorms, things like that. So, yeah, it's a little bit interesting. But I don't know if it really warrants all the time that we give to weather. We have a weather channel. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to talk about this, but we have a weather channel. Every newscast has at least 5 to 10 minutes devoted to a weather forecast. That really doesn't change. On the radio, it's the same. Not this radio station. I don't think we give the weather all that much, do we?
There was a weather brief, I believe. Each day, there was a student producer, I believe, that was in the meteorology department.
But that was good because it was a scientific weather forecast. That was more interesting.
Yeah, well, I think they also hosted a little bit of, like, a music show, too, which actually, it worked. I like different programming like that. That's what we're known for. We try to keep it that interesting here.
It wasn't just, hey, it might be some rain tomorrow, so get those galoshes ready. No, you know, who cares? Just look out the window. If it's raining, you know, dress appropriately. If it's not, you know, feel if it's hot, feel if it's cold. I just feel like we have to be guided into every decision we make, and we can't make decisions on our own. And I apologize to every weatherman out there who I'm right now insulting. I know meteorology is a serious field, but, you know, I think you're not being appreciated enough by just having it, you know, be this just silly thing that they do in the news. It really doesn't explain the science behind it.
I'm imagining them cutting to weather and on the nice days saying, we're not going to be doing weather this evening because it is just fine. Or, you know, like, you know, they just skip over because it's like it's normal. But then when there's something, and then they have more time for other news and local stuff and good informative programming.
But how about this?
But when it's a crisis, they get all hands on deck. They tell you what's going on because there's a storm, and that happens anyway.
There's a storm. Right? Okay, so look, if there's a change, all right, if there is something different is happening that you basically have a temperature change of 10 degrees or more, and I'm talking Fahrenheit. Look, I'm playing ball here. I'm even talking Fahrenheit. So, you know, if it's a 10-degree difference, then you have a weather forecast to explain just what's going to be happening, because people might be interested in that. But if tomorrow's going to be basically the same as today and the whole rest of the week is going to be the same, that's a sentence, maybe two sentences. And then, like, you know, more sports. No. More news. More real news. Because, believe it or not, you don't hear all the news. No, there's a lot more out there.
Yes.
And that's kind of what we're for, except we're wasting all our time talking about the weather.
Yes, indeed. The solid waste storm. Here it comes.
Now, that would be interesting. That would warrant the weather forecast. Absolutely. Okay, so you know what? We have a debate tonight. Yeah, we're debating my future as to whether or not I have one. No, we're debating what we might be. That's probably going on all the time. No, the gubernatorial, it's a weird word, isn't it? It's a governor's race, but you call it gubernatorial. Like the mayor's race is mayoral. The presidential race is presidential. The Senate race, okay, you get where I'm going here.
Is that the only place goober is in an official title?
I mean, are you the gubernator or the governor? It's like somebody pronounced it wrong and it just kind of stuck. But anyway, there's a gubernatorial debate tonight right after this show. Not on this station, though. On this station, you'll hear Finn. And you know what? That's the better choice. But it's a hard choice, because if you want to watch the gubernatorial debate, that's on TV starting at 7. You know what? You could have Finn on playing music through your speakers. And
oh,
you
that's
just,
the best.
You could have the gubernatorial. I like saying it, though. It's a fun word to say.
It rolls.
The gubernatorial debate can be on, the picture with the sound off, but the closed captioning on. What do you think about that?
Yeah, on some systems, our TV doesn't mute. It's, like, busted because...
Well, it's because of a wire, because we have a newfangled system. What's the wire called? Maybe
well, we're
knows.
Just using the optical output, but maybe I think they want the whole, like, HDMI to run into some kind of thing.
We
I
have
don't
this
know
bizarre,
how, I don't know how it works.
It's a state-of-the-art TV, and we have it hooked into the stereo, like we did the old TV, except the volume control on the TV doesn't control the stereo anymore, so that when you want to go up or down, you have to go into a different room that has the the actual stereo system. It used to be that you could go up and down and mute. You can't even mute. So you better decide what you want the volume to be and settle in, or be prepared to go back and forth and commute between two rooms.
You know how I know it's not... So when it's just on the regular TV speakers, it also doesn't work. It's,
uh-huh.
it's not the output. It's
no.
not the way we have it plugged in. I've thought about this. I'm tired of beating myself up about it.
It's
not my fault.
It's another example of new technology moving us backwards, you know, and making you tear your hair out trying to figure out what you're doing wrong. Yeah, you want to mute the damn TV because you're talking to somebody in the room, but you have to get up, walk over, and turn it down physically because there's a new type of cable that was not on the other one, right? It's a different kind of cable.
No, we used the optical output on the other one.
Well, if it's the same cable, then it should work the same way.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They're stupendous engineers, is what I was going to say. Do I have to praise them?
If anyone else has had this issue, please share it with us because we'd sure like to get this fixed. It's so expensive, and you think it's going to work nicely, but you know.
Or if you have a conspiracy theory about uh-huh. television manufacturers colluding with advertisers and making the mute function not actually mute, we want to hear it. We want to hear that theory too.
Just that,
at
yeah.
least for kicks, like.
Uh huh. I figured out a way around it is to simply record everything and just play it back, and then when you want to talk to somebody, you hit pause. That's
yeah.
really the only way to do it.
Well, when I'm listening to Finn's Revolution, I just walk around and manually adjust the receiver the way I like it. Unless the signal for the radio station is coming in, then I play that over the FM channel, but... We are in the process of upgrading that, and reception is a little spotty in the area.
Yeah,
you can also
that.
Listen to 107.3 W297BM, which is local, but it's more like if you're on campus, which a lot of people are not. A lot of people are away for the summer, but anybody who's taking summer classes or people in the neighborhood of Stony Brook University, you could pick us up on that channel,
well,
or WSB at IFM.
Yeah, that's a sure thing. Except when the website goes down. But WUSB.FM is, I think, how most people listen to us. Now, our signal is still crippled. We're at about 20-25% power. And you mentioned the 107.3 translator station we have. Yes, but the fascists from Connecticut, and I have no problem calling them that. It's right-wing talk radio. They put this station on our frequency somehow, even though, you know, we were told there's no possibility this could happen. They did it anyway. And now they're stepping on us in those areas that we were trying to fix from the old signal holes that 90.1 had. That's before we went to minimal power because our transmitter blew up, which, we're on the verge of getting a new one, but it won't be for a couple of months because of supply side things that are going on.
And it has not gone unnoticed. We pay attention to these things,
mm-hmm.
and our listeners care.
Yeah.
They care a lot, and that's all part of the process here. So
we really wandered away from the gubernatorial debate tonight, which, again, is happening at 7 o'clock.
And you can listen to it with WUSB in the background.
Well, that was my whole point, that you don't listen to it because you're listening to WUSB.
That's right.
You have it on, and then you have the closed captioning on. Then,
yeah.
then you contributed
you
the story
it.
About our TV set.
Yeah.
But that's one thing that does work. Is what was the we saw some program where we hit a button and we were getting described video like they have in Canada. You know, described video, that's basically, we might not know about that here, but in Canada, this is a feature on almost every network they have where you can go to a certain channel and, you know, it's for people who are sight impaired. You hear somebody describing what's happening on the screen. Mary moves to the kitchen and opens the drawer, and then you hear her talk. And it's, you know, every TV show has this. It's the most incredible thing, and it's so easy to do. Very hard to do here. You need to be signed up for something. But we found it. We found if you selected Spanish on a particular TV show, you were able to get described video. So, you know, they make it hard. They make it, you know, a real puzzle. But it does work sometimes. But we don't remember where we saw that. If I can, before the debate starts, Governor Kathy Hochul is squaring off against Long Island's Representative Tom Suozzi.
Not squaring up, squaring off.
Squaring off, yeah. He is a Democratic congressman, I believe, who is giving up his post to chase this dream, which, you know, honestly, I don't see much hope for him. He's kind of, you know, being a Republican with his attacks about high crime and, you know, things are out of control. It sounds that way. Now, the more interesting candidate, I think, is New York City public advocate Waman Williams. He's progressive and has a lot of interesting things to say. And I want to listen to that. I want to hear, you know, or see unclosed captioning, how he challenges her. And she should be challenged, absolutely. But here's why my concern is that Democrats don't tear each other apart and open the door for, you know, a certain little fascist to get into the office. I'm talking about Lee Zeldin, our current congressman, also giving up his post to run for governor. I don't know why people are doing that, but he's on the Republican side. And, you know, if Democrats mess this up and a Republican is able to slip into that position, the odds are very slim, but it still could happen. We've said that many times before, only to watch in horror as the worst-case scenario unfolds. If that were to happen, say goodbye to abortion rights, say goodbye to such gun safety measures as was just signed in New York, and all kinds of other progressive initiatives, you know, the legality of marijuana, things like that going down the road, more anti-trans hatred, anti-gay hatred being official positions. And, you know, if I had said that a year or two ago, it would have sounded so paranoid. But all you have to do is look at the states where Republicans are in control right now, and you see all the anti-trans and anti-gay legislation that's sailing through, you know, and also anti-history. You can't talk about certain things because it makes us look bad. Well, you know what? History never makes anybody look entirely good. That is, if it's actual history and not propaganda. It seems they want the propaganda. They want to be able to simply whitewash whatever happened and just make everything seem like it was perfect from the beginning. It's not. It's not perfect. It was, you know, there were horrors in our country and in other countries as well. You know, at least in those countries, Germany springs to mind, they know to teach their kids what happened so that they don't make the same mistakes. And so that they learn that they're not perfect. Yeah, it might make you feel a little bad, but I think everybody knows you're not responsible for that. You know, you as a kid didn't do it, but you still need to know what your ancestors did. You can't pretend that didn't happen. Well, Republicans want to do just that. And we're seeing that in many, many states right now. Yeah, these are all the things that the sort of left wing in this country has been warning about for a bunch of years. And it's coming true. They were right. But because of all the infighting, because of elevation of particularly crazy viewpoints, so that it seems like those are the mainstream points, the Democrats are not appreciated nearly as much as they should be. And I could see that happening yet again if we tear each other apart. So the debate will be interesting because, you know, I want to see Kathy Hochul challenged, and I want to see progressive talking points. But we have to be realistic and realize that it's not likely a progressive candidate can win that office. It really is not. What I want to see is incorporation of the progressive agenda into Kathy Hochul's agenda. And I hope that's possible. It might be naive to think that's possible. But right now, I don't think any other prospect is realistic. I really don't. And I think we make that mistake too often where we think, yeah, you know, we've got the majority on our side, so let's take three extra steps now. And the mainstream public is very uneasy with that. And so we wind up losing. We can't figure out why. And we blame each other, and the cycle just keeps continuing. So I hope Democrats are more strategic. I hope they realize, and I hope the public realizes this as well, that we can't get everything at once. We have to take one step at a time. We can't try and jump ahead. People don't like that. It backfires, and then you wind up moving behind. Don't want to see that anymore. There's also Los Angeles mayoral primary today, I believe. So that should be interesting, too. You got a billionaire running against a former congresswoman who's more progressive. And the billionaire might win because all these celebrities are getting behind him. He wants to get rid of the homeless. This is a Democrat who was a Republican, I think, up until a moment before he registered to run for the mayor of Los Angeles. And people are falling for that. So you might wind up with a quote-unquote Democrat as mayor who's really a Republican and wants to get rid of the homeless. And, you know, getting rid of the homeless sounds so easy. But what exactly does that involve? They have to go someplace. And this guy is a billionaire, a real estate magnate. Is that the right word?
Magnate,
yeah. Yes. Who's probably responsible for a lot of homeless people being there in the first place. Because, you know, building things, you drive people out of their homes. Who knows? There are no simple solutions. But just saying you're going to get rid of them, that tells me you don't really know what you're talking about. So that's a race to watch as well. And our friend in Canada from the other radio show, Kirby, wrote into us to tell us about the election they had in Ontario last week. He says, last week in Ontario, we witnessed exactly what was predicted by the polls. Doug Ford easily captured another majority government, which gives him control of Ontario for the next 4 years. A few observations. The election had one of the poorest turnouts in history, with only 42% of eligible Ontarians going to the polls. In this country, 42% I think would be pretty good. I've seen elections where it's in the 20s. It's pathetic. But yeah, if you don't show up, you're pretty much allowing the people who do so much more power than they're entitled to. And bad idea. So yeah, only 42% showed up. Now this means that Doug Ford's majority government was elected by about 18% of eligible voters. 18%! He has already said he is not looking at election reform. Why would he? He just won. Doug Ford's younger nephew, Michael Ford. Yeah, there's always another one. He has ascended from nowhere to municipal politics and now has somehow become a provincial member of parliament, winning his seat in the election. So there are now two Ford family members in Queen's Park, which is what the chambers and offices of the provincial government is called. The way we vote in Ontario is with paper ballots that are scanned at the poll and then stored. Paper ballots. The election had some technical issues, however, but overall the system worked perfectly, and results were able to be called minutes after polls closed. Minutes. Not only did Doug Ford win, the leaders of the two major parties resigned within hours after they failed to gain substantial political ground. Within hours, they resigned. The Liberal leader didn't even win his own seat. And guess what? There were no conspiracy theories. The losers said goodbye and left. Imagine that. Bobby Ann Brady made history by winning her riding, which is what a district is called, in Haldimand, Norfolk, as an independent. A first-time politician. Winning without a party is something that doesn't happen very often. It hasn't happened in Ontario for a long time. While she did have a long history of working within the government as an assistant, which certainly prepared her, Bobby Ann's victory shows that community can make a difference even in such a high-level election. So, I'm sure that's enough to chew on. Kirby writes, the reality is that we now have to pay for all these promises that have been made by Premier Ford with money or by the cutting of something else. Regardless of actual voting numbers, he has a large majority in a number of seats in government and will do whatever he wants, claiming this is the mandate that Ontario gave him. The sad thing is, he isn't wrong. His campaign slogan was, get it done, and he definitely did just that. Kirby, thank you for that very informative letter to us about the election in Ontario. I got to say, horrible as Doug Ford is, you hold him up to some of the people we have down here in the States, and I don't want to say that I would, I would want him in power, but, we talked about this on the other show. This is a guy that supports health care, supports gun reform, because that's what everybody up in Canada does. So you can take the worst in Canada, and it's still miles above what we have in the mainstream here, or so it seems. Maybe I'm being just a little negative, but yeah, I think I've got reason to be, after all the things that have happened.
So yeah, that distinction between the people, what the ordinary populace and society thinks of various things versus the people that show up, and you got to show up. I've heard that in various reports and commentary pieces lately, and I think that's an important thing. Participating in this process, however flawed, wherever you are, and really respect it. Respect the other people that are participating in it, and do your best to make sure that it's an honest and trustworthy system. Because the alternatives, they're not as great, wherever else you're going to point to in the world. So let's try to continue to work with what we've got to build a more livable society. So great for that political update.
Yeah. Well, we have another political update,
activity update.
Were you at the Jubilee?
I slept through it.
Well, so did the Queen.
Yeah.
The Jubilee is her 70th anniversary on the throne? Is that what it is?
Correct.
Okay. And it's, a platinum? I can't keep track of all the different medals and things, but, okay, what's beyond this? If she makes the 80, what's that? What's that going to be? Something that we haven't invented yet? I mean, they must stop someplace.
I don't know. It might be palladium.
Palladium? That's a thing?
Yeah, or...
I thought that was a venue. That's
maybe it's some other kind of alloy, or
I mean, she passed gold, right? Gold's in the past.
Yeah, and
right?
I think diamond too. Diamond's probably sooner. Right?
I would think diamond would be at the top.
Well, you would, but I think this is sort of based on the marriage and those sort of anniversaries. Is it because she's got this sort of like relationship with the country where.
You've noticed.
Yeah. Yeah, where she's, like, really committed to it and, and like, does her best to represent.
I don't know if she's proven herself. She might need to put in a little bit more time.
Well, that's why she's delegating a little more and just kind of clutching the reins the way she knows best.
But it's just, I don't know. I have the same question with, wedding anniversaries. It just, diamond seems to be the most when's the last time someone walked up to you and said, hey, look at my platinum ring? You know,
yeah, but when,
nobody
when
cares
it,
about
you got to come in early with that because uh-huh. that's the whole
that's what paper is.
Engagement that starts it off.
The first anniversary is paper, right? That's nice and simple.
Yeah, that's after the diamond's in the picture because you don't have any money.
Well,
and it's like, it goes tin and
okay,
then
diamond is like the kickoff. I get that, but that's not an anniversary. But, you know, you got paper, you've got cardboard, you've got wooden planks. I don't know what they do in the first few years.
Paper mache,
there you go. And all sorts of there's crypto. Crypto now has a bunch of things. So that opened up 25 years right there. Anyway, so while the Jubilee was going on, there was dissent occurring in the hallowed halls of Parliament. In fact, they announced this right after the Jubilee ended on Sunday. I was watching BBC, and there was just this this thing that said breaking. They didn't even have time to say news. It just said breaking. They didn't have time to write what the news was because it was just happening. They were announcing that there was going to be a vote of no confidence, but they call it a vote of confidence. I don't know which one is right. But basically, his own party was voting on whether or not to keep him around. And that vote was happening later that day, Monday. and if he lost the vote, he would be out that very day. Why can't we do things like that here? Oh, my God. Our leader in the past, I won't speak his name, did such horrible things, much, much worse than Boris Johnson having a gathering during COVID when he told other people not to have a gathering during COVID. To us what?
To us. I mean, in England, his transgressions have a different weight.
Well, yeah, no, that's true, because it's their country. But I maintain that if, our former leader had done those things as the British leader in that country, they would be much, much worse than that.
Yes, there is a high apathy level here.
Well, there's also a much better cover-up system. So that, you know, you can have a leader voted out of office within 24 hours, when before that everything was, seemed okay. Whereas in our country, you can have a leader basically initiate a violent insurrection and basically be called on it weeks later and have all the people who criticized him from his party stand up for him, and despite all the evidence, nothing happens. Or if they're in power, you don't even get to present the evidence. You don't even get to have witnesses. It's just so pathetic. And we're the ones with a written constitution. You know, England, they don't have a written constitution. It's an understood constitution. I'm sorry, they have a much better system. They really do. It's much more democratic. And I know it's not that democratic, but compared to what we have here, oh, my God. I mean, we have these people on the Supreme Court that many of whom don't have a connection with society at all. And we're supposed to follow what they tell us to do. It's sick. It is really sick. And I'm very worried what they're going to do with regards to open carry. I think that's what they're about to make a decision on, which could make it a lot more dangerous in New York than it has been, because people from other states will be able to waltz in here with their weapons, despite New York state laws. Things like that. It just makes you wonder, what kind of a system do we have here? It's almost comical, but it's not.
It's a broken, an egregiously broken system. And you're right. Like, the leadership, they're outside the normal circles of society, all the benefits of the office, protection, they can even be convicted of crimes, or, you know, like, they have really no accountability, our oversight, and of course their loyalties then to these corporate individuals and so forth. I mean, it's really sick. It's a really perverse, gross system that because of that outsized influence that corporate influence like the Citizens United critique, all of those PACs and super PACs, that money concentrates decision making that would perhaps be represented over a larger swath of the people that actually vote and care about politics, which again is different from just everybody because not enough people vote in the first place. But wow,
yeah,
so much to say. Yeah, it's another reason why the governor's race is important, because these people have been planted onto the court through this very slow to react system. I think that's the other thing that you're pointing out is the recourse is not just immediately doing something. It's we had like this impeachment and stuff. I know that they could do something faster within Congress. If is that Article 20, the 25th Amendment, but they would have to be very unified in the that legislative branch to bring that and remove or otherwise question a president. If that would be the closest swift thing, but we all know how dysfunctional that branch of government is. Dysfunctional enough to then only let through all these nominees for our now really foul-looking court.
It's very disturbing and worrisome. You know, I take heart though in seeing people just getting more involved. For instance, this Saturday there are going to be marches all throughout, or rallies all throughout the country, against gun violence, against these ridiculous lack of laws and regulations that we have in this country. And I'm seeing, we talked about this last week, about how the Second Amendment is not necessarily what people think it is. And we did a very interesting trace, courtesy of someone on Twitter, I know that sounds ridiculous, but it's basically pointing to specific parts of the Constitution. And you realize the Second Amendment, it does not exist in isolation. It's part of the rest of the document. And you can see how certain words were defined in that document so that you understand what they meant, or you're more likely to understand what they meant, rather than simply listening to what Ted Cruz says. Now, I've seen, and this really gives me hope, I've seen a lot of people saying similar things. This has always bothered me, because people on the left as well as people on the right, Democrats as well as Republicans, have accepted that the Second Amendment gives people the right to pretty much carry whatever they want to carry. And that's not what it is. Never was. Here's something from the Washington Post, how the Second Amendment was reinterpreted to protect individual rights. More people are talking about this now. To counter calls for stricter gun laws in the wake of the massacre of elementary school students in Uvalde, Texas, Republican politicians cite the Second Amendment, saying that the government cannot infringe on people's rights to protect themselves, and that this is fundamental to preserving liberty. And here's what Ted Cruz said. Rarely has the Second Amendment been more necessary to secure the rights of our fellow citizens. He said that at the NRA convention, mere days afterwards, in the same state. Rarely has the Second Amendment been more necessary to secure the rights of our fellow citizens. Historians, though, say that the notion that the amendment protects people's rights to have guns for self-defense is a relatively recent reading of the Constitution, born out of a conservative push in the 1980s and 1990s. It's that recent. And having lived before that period myself, I can tell you that is not how people thought beforehand. They did not have this mad rush to arm themselves. This is recent. It's a recent sickness. The text of the Second Amendment reads, a well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Now, that's the disaster of a sentence right there. And in order to understand it, you really have to delve into the Constitution a little bit more.
Right. And the reinterpretation from that period has been that means the individual has free rein to any weapon for any reason because they have some sort of sovereignty as a militia themselves. And that is not exactly what that statement is about, nor should it be.
The historical consensus is that for most of American history, The amendment was understood to concern the use of guns in connection with militia service. The founding fathers were likely focused on keeping state militias from being disarmed. That's according to Joseph Blocker, who specializes in the Second Amendment at Duke University's law school. I'd believe someone like this over somebody at the bar that just wants to keep their stockpile of weapons in their home. It's comical, but it's tragic at the same time. An individual's right to use guns in self-defense is not expressly written in the Constitution, said Reva Siegel, a law professor at Yale, who has written prominent law review articles on the subject. The interpretation that the Second Amendment extends to individuals' rights to own guns only became mainstream in 2008. Yeah, 2008, when the Supreme Court ruled in a landmark gun case that Americans have a constitutional right to own guns in their homes, knocking down the district's handgun ban. That was the first Supreme Court decision to strike down a gun control law in constitutional history, Siegel said. And at the time, the court's reading was considered broad even to a number of conservatives. You see the problem here. It's these old guys and women in the Supreme Court basically ruling politically, saying that, this is what they meant. When for hundreds of years beforehand, people knew what they meant. And they didn't have to basically distort the words to get what they wanted.
A huge part of that is Antonin Scalia and the originalist interpretation of the Constitution, yada, yada. And I'll just, you know, delve into that just a little bit in that we have none of this amplification of the wrong interpretation in what we're saying here, in our opinion, in a vacuum. None of that occurred in a vacuum. That occurred with a huge amount more of assault-style rifles being built, a lot more communications technology, people sharing information about this stuff. This isn't just like you know, esoteric knowledge that, you know, veterans or people that are real historians or enthusiasts would know. It starts circulating and becomes infinitely shareable to a huge segment of society, perhaps people that are still playing video games. Because they have time for that, and they're impressionable, and start lauding and following this kind of weaponry and power as their identities forming in probably negative ways, and there are other factors in my opinion too that are also happening. The kinds of innovation with 3D printing, much more recent, but you know, modifying weapons like this, changing things from semi-automatic to automatic, and at the same time having pro-gun people tell you that it's the same thing as anything else. Well, fundamentally, yeah, but firepower, the types of modifications and things that are available, information that is being shared, and the behaviors and attitudes around this kind of weaponry and ease of access, as much as proliferation, all contribute to this problem. Alongside that attitude that everyone is a militia somehow, even however informally, which is just so wrong when you really think about it.
It is. And, you know, we keep making the same points week after week, year after year. I think more people are hearing it. I think more people are saying it. I'm witnessing this myself, where these points are being made when, you know, I was super frustrated over the years that they weren't being made. And now I'm seeing it more. So that gives me hope. Another thing, there was a CBS News poll released on Sunday. 81% of Americans support background checks on all potential gun buyers. 72% favor a federal red flag law, which, by the way, we have here in Suffolk County. And it has high marks from everybody. It keeps guns out of the hands of people who are potentially dangerous or suicidal or, have mental problems that a gun certainly would not help. So Suffolk County actually is leading New York in red flag implementation. So 72% favor a federal red flag law. 62% favor a nationwide ban on assault weapons. That's a huge number. That's a big number. So you can't just, put that aside and say, we're not going to get anywhere. We're not going to win. Well, the Senate is. I mean, they're going to do something, but what they do, it's going to be so minimal and so laughably absurd. We can't give up. We have to keep the pressure on and make sure they do more. They have to do more. Yeah, we've been here before. We have. This this kind of insanity by a relatively small amount of people, considering, and it is a minority of people that are this gung-ho into guns. When have we, as a country, seen something that we know is bad for us, that we can't seem to get rid of? And that, at the time, we would say, yeah, it's always going to be a fact of life. Can't do anything about it. Cigarettes. Do you remember? Do you remember back? Maybe you don't, but if you were in the 1980s, 1990s, so many people smoked everywhere. Inside restaurants, on trains, in people's houses, all the time.
In airplanes.
In airplanes. That's right. Doctors would smoke. Okay, we're going back to the 50s for that. But I mean, it was so pervasive. And we all knew how unhealthy it was for us, or at least many of us knew that, but we couldn't get anything done because the tobacco companies had such power, and you couldn't get past Congress because they were beholden to those same tobacco companies. And now look at us, 2022. If you have a cigarette in a movie, they have to note, that's kind of silly, but they note that there's cigarette smoking because it upsets people. It's that negative. It's that dangerous. And you don't have smoking in restaurants anywhere. You remember when they said they were going to ban smoking in bars? The outcry? This will put bars out of business? All kinds of horrible things will happen. And look, the bars are still there. People, fewer and fewer every year, smoke in the street. We look down on it now. And only 20 or 30 years ago, we didn't. We embraced it. And those of us who did look down on it, we were the ones who were the problem. I remember even hanging out with friends, wanting to go and get food somewhere in New York City. Just want to have food. I don't want smoke. Having really intense arguments with my friends. I want to smoke. Well, can't you smoke when you're not eating? You couldn't get through to them. And I'd have to yield time and time and time again. That is how insistent, that is how unhealthy we were. Something changed. Something changed, and we moved past that, and we changed as a people. Socially, we just shunned what cigarettes were doing to us, what they were. We did all kinds of things, like raising the price and, not allowing advertising, and all kinds of things that hurt the tobacco industry, and more people got it. Every single year, more and more people got it, until we got to a point where the people smoking, they were the problem. They were the minority. Well, they always were the minority, really, but they basically were the ones that had to work hard to get what they wanted, rather than the other way around. And now, today, hardly ever see people smoking. I know there are people who smoke, sure. But I hardly see it. Vaping, that's a whole other issue. Get into that some other time. We can do the same thing with guns. We have to start shunning them everywhere. Now, obviously, the laws are the important thing. But there's more we can do. There's a lot more we can do. We can stop embracing all kinds of entertainment that basically worship guns, whether it's video games or movies or TV shows. And I am not saying by any means that they are responsible. But I'm saying having that is basically another feather in the gun lobby's cap that, you know, kids love to play with guns online. And, you know, when you see a shootout on the movie set, on a movie screen, somehow that's exciting. And that's called entertainment. Well, you know, there are so many other ways to be entertained, so many other things that people can do in a video game. You don't have to have this. We can start moving past it. And I think that's something we all can do. You know, if you have a choice of seeing a movie that is all about, you know, shooting up a city or something, maybe see something else. I mean, you don't have to go crazy for the, you know, Julia Roberts, you know, romantic comedy or anything like that. But maybe we start making films that are more cerebral or just have, you know, intensity of a different nature. Guns are a crutch that we keep falling back on. That's a societal thing. Now, make no mistake, laws are the only thing that can definitely keep them from destroying our society. Entertainment just reflects that. But we have to do more. And if our elected officials aren't doing enough, we don't give up, then we do even more. We get rid of them. We figure out other ways to get rid of this cancer that's literally killing us. I just hope we don't forget. I just hope we don't move on. You know, it's really a sad state of affairs. And I hope they talk about it tonight in this debate that's 10 minutes away.
Yeah, and don't sanitize. I mean, we don't have to be exceedingly graphic everywhere, but sanitizing, making everything friendly, that's not how you have adult conversations. And I agree with you. I think our media, the kinds of storytelling we're doing is narrow. I mean, when you really think about how many different ways, how many different recording methods there are now, like, there's so much content out there that could be elevated, and we're going to tell the same tired stories on primetime. I mean, we could do so much better. They can be all kinds of stories. They can be stories that are, you know, counterculture wars.
Right.
You know, that's interesting.
You know, the thing that gets me, though, with, like, movie ratings or TV descriptions, if somebody gets angry in some form of entertainment and smashes a mirror or a window or something like that, that's considered violence, and it's marked as violence. There is violence in this film, in this TV show. If you pull out a gun and shoot somebody in the head, it's also violence. And I think there's a difference between the two. I think, you know, if we're going to label cigarettes in TV and movies, we should label gun violence, specifically gun violence. It's an epidemic. You know, it's something that hurts so many people, and it hurts more and more people because we consider it normal. You know, if we stop doing that, and we can say, you know what, I don't want to see that. It's got gun violence in it. Don't need that. You know, let's resist that. That's a step. It doesn't solve the problem, but it's a step. And that step can lead us closer to a world where these things are taken off the streets, taken out of the homes. And I agree that semi-automatic or military-style weapons have no place in the home. If, you know, the Constitution does not say anything like that at all, ever, never did. There might be some crazy state legislatures that have said something like that, but there is absolutely no right to do something like that, and it's so unhealthy. It really is. You know, I keep seeing pictures of people posing with all their lying in bed with nothing but guns around them. I think there's something wrong when you do things like that. I really do. I think it's kind of a mental illness. And if it is a mental illness, you shouldn't be around guns. Yeah.
Yeah, it's to me a complex of sorts, I think. Inadequacies
right.
Manifest or projected upon the world in the form of weapons.
Yeah, and it's something that, if nothing else, look at the rest of the world. See what the rest of the world does. I mean, we're aware that there is a world out there, right? And that it's, you know, there are good things going on in that world, and that sometimes we can learn from what other countries, other people are doing. Well, let's look at how other countries have handled this. And instead of being stubborn and saying, well, we want to do it our way, when there's absolutely no evidence that our way is a better way, you know, we just have to be mature about this and insistent. All right. I didn't mean to lecture about this. It's just, I feel so strongly after these horrible events that have taken place. I mean, so many mass shootings in the past few days or throughout the year. You know, it's the numbers just are staggering. Sure, there are things that kill more people. Those are terrible, too. I mean, I was just looking at statistics today for you know, car accidents. Get this, in 2021, you know how many crashes there were in New York State? 371,520. And 146,720 people were either injured or killed in New York State. You know how many were killed? 1,105. That's insane. Cars are a huge problem. Yeah. We can do a whole show about that. It's not an either or. There are terrible things going on many levels, and you have to address them. And I think, you know, with cars, technology is taking the forefront. I look forward to some of the increased safety that self-driving cars might bring us, but it has to be done right.
And people pick the platforms. Don't forget that. We're all waiting around. We're thinking, oh, the politicians are going to unveil their platforms. That's wrong. That's the wrong way of thinking about it. We drive what they promote as their platform based on what your area, your country, what the needs are. It always should be that. And they're listening.
Absolutely. Hey, we're out of time. I've had a lot of fun over the past few days. I discovered on Wikipedia, they have a list of Billboard's Hot 100 songs of all years. And I went back to 1972, which for some reason had so many recognizable and classic songs. And I basically just grabbed a bunch of them and made some CDs. And, you know, it's just really nice to have that, to be able to remember those for those of us who were around in 1972. But it was a particularly good year. And I found this song. You might remember this song. It's Three Dog Night. It's called Black and White. It's all about black kids and white kids and peace and equality.
The ink is black, the page is white. Together we learn to read and write.
But we're not going to play that because that's the hit. Well, I learned by reading about this song, because I would like to read about every song that I was listening to. Basically, this song was first recorded by Pete Seeger, and it's all about equality with black kids and white kids in school and how the Supreme Court ruled, you know, Brown versus Board of Education and all that. I didn't know there was that much history in the song. I thought it was just about, you know, everybody getting along and you know, all that kind of thing. But no, it's a real social piece. So we're going to go out with the Pete Seeger version from years earlier. Please write to us, otw@2600.com. We'll see you next week.
And join the revolution coming up next.
Oh, the ink is black, the page is white. Together we learn to read and write, to read and write. And now a child can understand, this is the law of all the land, all the land. Oh, the ink is black, the page is white. Together we learn to read and write, to read and write. Their robes were black, their heads were white. The schoolroom doors were closed so tight, were closed up tight. Nine judges all set down their names to end the years and years of shame, years of shame. Their robes were black, their heads were white. Oh, the slate is black, the chalk is white, the words stand out so clear and bright, so clear and bright. And now at last we plainly see the alphabet of liberty, liberty. Oh, the slate is black, the chalk is white, together we learn to read and write, to read and write. Oh, a child is black or a child is white, the whole world looks upon the sight. What a beautiful sight. Oh, very well, the whole world knows, this is the way that freedom grows, freedom grows. Oh, a child is black or a child is white. It turns by day and turns by night, it turns by night. It turns so each and every one can take his station in the sun, in the sun. Oh, the ink is black, the page is white, together we learn to read and write, to read and write.